You've tuned in to Mythbehaving, a podcast where we get up close and personal with today's most imaginative authors. Every episode, we'll be sitting down with a new writer to discuss their magic worlds, futuristic visions, and how they bring their wildest ideas to the page. Sitting in for my esteemed partner again today is Jen Nixon. Jen, as my penultimate partner, how was your week?
It was pretty good. How was yours?
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice. It's cooling down out here. We got a little bit of rain.
Did you hear? It's October.
No. Oh, my gosh.
I can't believe it.
Oh, it's, you know, I don't know if you followed, but my wife brought home candy corn for me.
Oh, you lucky dog. Oh,
I know, right?
Nice.
So great.
That's awesome. So who do we have on the podcast today?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. Hailing from Tacoma, Washington, Lauren Patzer has been an information and technology guru, actor, writer, and film producer, among other pursuits. His love of horror began with a nonstop reading of the Amityville Horror. With three novels and over 50 short stories published now, his most recent work is the top-rated horror novel, Granny Bale. Also coming out in October 2023 is his brand new horror novel, Undead Reckoning. Ladies and gentlemen, Lauren Patzer. Lauren, how are you doing today?
Welcome, welcome.
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. Doing good. Enjoying October.
Hey, are you getting any rain up there?
We got a lot of rain the last couple of days. Nothing today.
Oh, all right, fine.
So it's been dry today.
Yeah, we got a break from the rain too, thankfully.
You guys, oh man. I just love when it rains. I'm just that guy. So yeah.
We have to send it your way.
Yeah, it's I like it better. It's nice and calming and soothing, and I enjoy it.
And you don't feel guilty about doing nothing all day long.
I think that's the best part. Lauren, tell us about Granny Bale.
So Granny Bale is a story about the haunted town called Tugville, or cursed town rather. And what happens is these four teenagers, they're going about their life, struggling with their daily things happening. When the curse of Granny Bale starts to rear its ugly head, she's a villain from the past that is coming back. She's been sealed away in a sarcophagus, a cement sarcophagus, that is starting to crumble, and she's starting to get her feelers out into the town and make things even worse than they already are.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I like that.
What I'm curious what came first. Was it the character or was it the town? Because the town sounds like it's been really built out.
The character, absolutely. Granny Bale came to me in a dream. It was kind of like your 80s, you know, slasher fest kind of dream, which there's kind of that scene in the book. But that was really the crux of it, was Granny Bale, just this demon-y fire witch character that's just full of vengeance and hate and a lot of fire.
Mm. Fire. Fire's good.
Fire.
Fire.
Oh, there we go. Okay. The
Sorry.
Nerds are thrilled now.
Yeah.
Way to go,
Jen. Nerd.
Way to go.
But it's been, it was a lot of fun just kind of, that's where I started. It was from that kernel of the villain, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of have to build out that world of what kind of town does she occupy? You know, and what are the people in there? What have they been going through? What gets, you know, them going during the day? How do they carry through with, you know, the horrible things that are going on?
Right. Yep.
And the town has been cursed for roughly 50 years. And she's part of that. But then if you read the book, you find out there's other stuff going on that builds into that tapestry.
Right, don't give too much away. So I see that you have an IMDb page. That's very interesting. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yes. I've been acting, let's see. I think my first role was probably when I was 12. I did a pilot episode for like a singing kids show kind of thing that never went anywhere, but I was on it. That was my first official role. I think I did theater stuff probably around 8 years old. Mm-hmm. I think was my first role. That was in a play where my dad played Scrooge. And so I was just one of the kids in the, you know, the townspeople. But since then I've been doing, you know, short film roles off and on. Did some commercial work in, when I lived in Houston 15 years ago. Well, it wasn't 15 years ago, not 9 years ago. And then since I've come up here, I've done some horror shorts. Some I've written and some I've actually starred in as well.
Wow, nice. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any big star moments? Anybody you've run into?
I'll tell you, the biggest stars I ran into weren't really on stuff that I was doing mm-hmm. too much. When I was in California. I grew up in California, mm-hmm. And I went to Camp Idlewild, which was a musical theater camp.
Yeah.
And while we were there, the person we were doing Music Man, and the character Winthrop was played by Walter Koenig's son.
Who
has since passed, unfortunately.
Right.
But I got to meet Walter Koenig, and I did my darndest to not geek
nerd out.
It was exactly. I mean, I was such a big Star Trek fan, and I'm just,
hey Vessel, say Vessel. Yes.
Okay, I don't want to embarrass my friend who is his son by being this, you know, total geek. So I was very polite and tell them it was very nice to meet him. He was absolutely gracious and absolutely wonderful. So
I'm sure they appreciate that much more than freaking out.
Yeah. Yeah. no doubt.
In there.
In 19, I think it was 78, the summer of 1978, I met Mark Hamill
in a theater.
He was in a theater to see the audience reaction to Corvette Summer.
Which the movie after Star Wars
and before Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
And he was the nicest guy you could ever want to meet. I've been very lucky to meet nice celebrities.
Yeah.
Right.
They're nice.
Yeah. But they've been real. And then of course when I did some of the work I did in Houston, I met some of the some other actors as well, whose names I will not be able to remember. The guy from Animal House who plays the throat on the stairs. I can't remember his name. I want to say it's
Belushi though. He was not.
No, it's not Belushi. Yeah. It's not Belushi. No, it was one of the other character actors who's been a character actor throughout the decades.
And we're straining my memory because I haven't seen. Oh, okay.
Otter.
No, it was not Otter. No, it was the guy. He played. I think he didn't play guitar. He was just like a. I can't remember.
What was his character's name?
I want to see it was Bruce, I think is his name.
Fun though.
That's all right. Awesome. You know, look it up later and insert it.
Everybody will let us know later. How could you not remember?
How could you not remember his name?
The last time I saw Animal House.
I think he's still an actor today. So.
Yeah, nice. Very cool.
But I did a pilot with him, which didn't go anywhere. I believe the name of that pilot was Laws of Chance.
Oh,
and I think his character was named Chance.
Oh, got it.
It was some kind of political, lawyery thing.
Yeah.
And he was awesome as well. He really was.
Oh, nice. It's, you know, there's always horror stories, but it's so nice when they're just people. Yeah. Okay. There's people.
Exactly.
They got a good break and they made it and that's awesome. And they're gracious about meeting people who are paying their salary. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Up and coming actors.
Yeah. You know, that's always fun.
It's really cool. Really cool.
And what did you enjoy more? Did you enjoy the writing part more or the acting part more?
That is such acting is such a solo activity. I mean, when you're writing, you're not, if you're talking to somebody, you're not writing. So you're not doing your job. Mm-hmm. I love the act of writing and creating these worlds and doing these things, but it doesn't replace the acting. You know, there's a thrill you get from being on set and, you know, and just, you know, when they say, you know, action and you're right there in the moment and doing your thing. That is actually secondary to theater, because theater, you get instant feedback on what you are doing and how that is entertaining the audience. I was with a improv troupe for 2 years while I was in Houston as well. And that was just the most fun, just coming up with stuff off the top of your head, interacting with the guys. And it was, you were right in the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's just your mind and your skills. And, you know, the audience, usually a drunk audience, to what you're doing on stage and, you know, what's crazy and stuff. Mm-hmm. Of course, the drunker they are, the more, you know, naughty these suggestions, but, but typically it's just guys up there on the stage. So
mm-hmm. Nice. Lauren, you also write science fiction. You write as Artemis Withers. How did you get your pseudonym?
So the Artemis comes from, I don't know if you're familiar with the Wild Wild West mm-hmm. TV show.
Artemis Gordon.
Mm-hmm. That's where Artemis came from.
Nice.
And Withers just sounds a little bit silly. A little bit like Smithers from The Simpsons, right? But I kind of got the name for just the idea for that kind of name mm-hmm. from the what is the name of the book series? A series of unfortunate events.
Oh yeah,
Lemony Snicket, right? Mm-hmm. Which is not the writer's real name. That's another made up name, yeah. Right? And so that's where I came up with that, because it's science fiction humor, you know. Very much along the lines of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, except with an English accent instead of a British one. just lots of fun. I love doing it because it's got, you know, it's not only appeals to my love of science fiction, but also my sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And so it's right. got all that nice combo in there. It's I would say for the most part, it's just a 15-year-old sense of humor mm-hmm. kind of jokes. You know, there's poop jokes and things like that. but because I knew I was when I was writing it, I've got three daughters mm-hmm. and I wanted to be clean enough for them to read. So there's no cursing in it. There's no curse words or anything. There's some substitutions for curse words. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the characters, his thing is he doesn't want cursing when he's piloting a ship. So I just, I'm able to kind of, you know, put some things and reasons there. The curse words are not in there.
Are not there.
Mm-hmm. The first book is a space opera, strictly space opera.
Mm-hmm.
The second book is actually a little bit of a horror thing. There's robot zombies and other zombies and zombie. So they go on a planet where they experience, you know, some really strange and horrific things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of, so I, that was my idea, was kind of the books would be a nod to different genres. Even though they're all technically space operas, they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first one's a nod to Star Wars at the beginning, and then some other craziness at the end. I think there's a little bit of Dune in there, because there's a sewer worm, which is not quite a sewer worm, but it's there's so much poop. there's always poop happening. I think in the second book, the beginning of the second book, the one with the space zombies, they get it's not space fleas, it's space. It's not. I got the idea from the space herpes from the ice pirates.
Yeah, from ice pirates.
And so they're these little things that they infect a host, and then they multiply, and then they very quickly, and then they have their offspring, which kills the host.
Yeah.
What they don't know is that it goes up the exit.
Oh,
so so of course. They're able to eradicate the danger, but it's just different ways of introducing some fun moments that you wouldn't otherwise think about. But I mean, I like to throw a little bit of, you know, realism in there. I mean, there's still that,
right.
The horror of things happening that are, you know, beyond somebody's control.
Mm-hmm.
There's a creature who comes on from the first book. He's a member of the crew, but he's an arachnid.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically folds himself up into a human-like shape. You know, in clothing and moves around that way. And so
create a human shaped spider. Just what I need for my nightmares.
That Jen's good. Jen's out.
And a little vocoder that makes him, you know, be able to interact in the language. But then when he gets on the ship, They have him be the quartermaster inside this huge deck with a bunch of storage things going on, and he's allowed to spread out into his natural form, which scares most people.
Yeah,
it would scare me.
We're on board. Yeah, we're on board with being scared. Yeah,
but he's the one. It's actually him who's able to help cure the problem. But then it affects him as well. And then when he has to be cured by his own. By that own situation, it drives him a little bit mad, and they almost get attacked by him when he goes into a mad, insane rage.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how do you draw the line between your fantasy, horror, supernatural, and reality? You want it to be real, but at the same time, you want these elements in there. So, how do you draw that line?
So for me, a lot of it's, especially in the science fiction world, I try to do, like, they're space battles, but they're, I try to do them as a, like, you'd have these large masses moving through space, and it takes forever for them to turn around,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's not like, you know, the space battles you see in regular science fiction, and, you know, they're zooming around as if they're zooming through atmosphere, mm-hmm. you know? But when you're zooming around in space, I mean, there's a whole different way of turning things and thrusters and whatnot. And when you've got large ships doing it, it's really a complicated, mm-hmm. Effort to get around and do things.
Right.
And in the first book, there's a space battle between the main character ship and another ship, and that's part of the thing is how hard it is to maneuver. And if things break in the middle of you trying to maneuver, things happen, like a collision.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of try to introduce a little bit thing, you know, space is dangerous.
Yep.
Just doing a space battle. I mean, but that actual battle comes into play in the second book,
mm-hmm.
in a little bit of a realistic way. And the planet, Part of their ship comes off in that during that collision, and they need to go back and retrieve that piece.
Mm.
And it winds up, it's been towed back to its home world. And then they have to go and confront the fact that they have all the people on that ship died.
Mm.
Mm.
So now you've got that, a little bit of that guilt, as well as, you know, now you're going to face the consequences of, you know, you've killed all these people. And now how do you deal with that that fallout?
Right. So you take it forward from there. Like, what's the what is the actual logical outcome of this? Yeah. That's nice.
And there's still some humorous stuff going. I say, what's the most horrible thing that could happen? Okay, well, let's do that. But it may not be funny. And that's how I design the science fiction humor book. Mm. So nice. there's some real, I mean, there's introductions of real issues in there. And that's, I think that's where I put the realism. It's like, okay, these guys are human. They're going to do these things that they're experiencing. There's going to be consequences. They're going to be real world things that they're going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's what I do now. In the horror books, the horror books are primarily one-offs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have serious stuff going on with them. But I do try to keep that realistic. Like when I was building the sarcophagus for Granny Bale, which is a steel rebar and cement reinforced dome, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was, how would that break down? Well, if it was just weather, it wouldn't break down that much. But so I introduced, I put this in the Midwest, where there's fracking going on. And so it's introducing, you know, earthquakes into an area that didn't have earthquakes before, right?
Right.
So you've got that little element of the real world coming in, you know, things that, you know, are happening that, well, because the leader of the town is not a particularly nice person, he doesn't care what's happening. But you've got that element there. You've got weather going on. You've got all sorts of things that are breaking down that protective shell that nobody's paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's often this deserted part of the town that nobody's paying attention to, and it's breaking down and there's nobody check. There's only one guy checking in to visit on it, and he's doing it every once in a while. And he's looking at it going like, you know, it's not looking good. I think I need to go talk to some people. But before he can get things going, fate intervenes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As it does.
Yes, it does.
Nice.
But but the real interactions of the teenagers, you know, their environment, they have to deal with bullies and family environments that are they're different but horrible in their own, you know, unique different ways. Right. And some of them react, you know, some of them react honorably, some of them don't. Which that's reality. I mean,
you've got
people who are, you know, their emotions take over and they do things that if you look at it, if you step back and say, well, the guy he did that to deserved it. I mean, that's one thing, but if you're in the moment in that character's head, that's not who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's reacting out of pure emotion and rage, which happens.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's reality.
This episode of Myth Behaving is brought to you by the Bath Bomb Diva, producing fine handcrafted bath bombs and shower steamers. Scents ranging from fruits to floral to musk to weird French names, the Diva offers a wide selection for maximum olfactory goodness. Bath bombs are offered with and without prizes inside and made using water-soluble dyes for no messy residue. Entirely coincidentally in time for Halloween is the Final Girl Bath Bomb, scented with Grim Reaper oil, which, oddly, is floral and pungent. It is decorated with a plastic stabby-slashy toy and containing a button picturing an icon of 80s and 90s horror. Halloween-themed glass bottles and toy cauldrons of bubble bath are also on offer. Check all the creations out at www.bathbombdiva.com. And thanks again to Bath Bomb Diva for sponsoring the show. So tell us about your new novel, Undead Reckoning.
So Undead Reckoning is... it follows a serial killer. So that's your hero / anti-hero. Serial killer.
Dexter, yeah.
Yep. he has killed another serial killer's granddaughter.
Mm.
Oh.
Somewhat slightly in the past. Well, this other serial killer, now that he's over his... sense of loss and hurt from the only thing he really cared about other than killing.
Mm-hmm.
He's decided he's going to get his revenge cursing our hero / anti-hero by bringing back all of his victims as zombies.
Nice.
That is a great idea.
Very karmic.
Love that.
Yeah, that comes back around.
And since he thinks it might not be that fair, he's gonna curse his own to come after himself as well. So, but then, you know, if push comes to shove, it winds up they're all after just the main character.
Yeah,
because he did the spell.
Course, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there's a little nod to some. I mean, this is kind of a horror humor kind of thing. I call him the handyman killer because he cuts off the right forearm of his victims.
Oh my, the handyman. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
Oh, jeez.
And then you know.
Very punny.
Yeah, there you go. And then the other killer asked him, why didn't it call you the army killer?
Oh,
I love it.
Right? So there's a character, there's a headless character in there that's essentially a take on Cheech and Chong. So,
oh, okay.
just fun stuff. So there, what I did a little bit differently with this was the two main characters, they're Hispanic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I didn't go with my, you know, I'm Caucasian, but these guys are Hispanic, and I actually present them in different. They're in different worlds. Some of their in like the headless guy, that's a whole nother character. He's a gangbanger, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's Hispanic as well. Not all the characters are Hispanic, but these particular ones, they're presented differently from different points of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're living different lives as they're coming up in the world, and mm-hmm. so I kind of like that just from the. You know, you've got the, you know, some of the more traditional stuff going on here, but then you've got someone growing up, not really paying attention to the heritage or whatever. They're just surviving. And then you've got somebody who's, you know, in ghetto LA,
mm-hmm.
right. just, you know, very into that. And then, so I tried to, hopefully I did that well.
I guess the reviews will tell you, huh?
Reviews will tell me. Yeah. And that's the hard. Well, I'll tell you, reviews. Reviews mm-hmm. are hard. Reviews yeah. are hard to come by.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good or bad. So
especially these days.
Yeah, I've got. I have one book with reviews. Out of all the books I've done, I've only got one that has any reviews.
it so is effort. It is effort. Like it it's. Is, yeah.
Because you know the restrictions are you can't pay for reviews.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Never pay for a review.
And you shouldn't, well, right? Right. Yeah, it's right. so which tempting though. Fine. $10, $100.
Not even Kirkus. I don't care. I won't pay for a review.
Yeah.
But ever. Then how do you get that review?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's
a lot of work. A lot of blog begging, tours. A lot of groups. Begging. A lot of author takeovers.
Yeah.
Yeah. and the crazy thing, I went and did a review. I did a review swap with somebody,
mm-hmm.
Another local author up here. So I read their book, and I went on Amazon to do the review. And it was difficult to get to the point of being able to do the review.
Mm.
I had to qualify with a purchase
mm-hmm.
of $50 or more in order to do the review on Amazon of that book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, my wife does all the purchasing, so my account didn't have anything.
Oh, so,
oh, right.
So it just yeah. looks like this empty account.
I'm like, oh,
yeah.
okay. So I had to go, you know, make a purchase on my account yeah. for stuff that we normally buy,
yeah.
right. Just to do the review. And I'm like, well, no wonder nobody's reviewing things because yeah. they've got an active Amazon customer yeah. in order to review on that platform. And I said, well. Heck. I might have used other words.
Heck,
but,
everyone.
You know.
Heck.
All right, cover your ears.
Gosh darn.
Yeah, that's kind of the frustrating part of writing. The marketing and the getting reviews and all that stuff.
You yeah, know, that's the other frustrating yeah, part. The writing, the marketing, yeah, the reviews.
The writing's easy, in my opinion. Easy. The writing is super easy.
Some days.
Compared to all the other stuff.
Used to be the hardest part, now it's
was
not.
Was the writing? Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
It really absolutely. Used to be. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. I remember when I finally managed to get my second book written and over to the publisher, and I felt like I could stop doing a little marketing for just a little while and focus on the editing. I was like, oh my gosh, I could read books for my own enjoyment again.
yep.
That's hard. It's hard work. Yeah, yeah. It's hard work. Yep. So,
yeah. yeah. So I've got the social medias going mm-hmm. and do the promotions and whatnot. I do little video readings and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And it's a grind, I'll tell you.
What do you find the most effective for your marketing?
I honestly don't know yet.
Right. No one does.
I don't
know. Yeah, I honestly don't know. Because yeah. it's hard to map that whatever that thing you've done to a spike in sales. It's right. hard to match right. the data with the timing of the things. I think you can do it a little bit easier with TikTok,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing a little reading on there. And then if you see a spike in sales, you know, it's because you've done that
mm-hmm.
on TikTok
right.
Because you have that immediate publication of the TikTok. Whereas if you do ads, you don't know when those ads are popping up in front of people's faces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when you do even something on Facebook, just a post on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
you don't have any control over when people are going to see that post. Because it may come up in their feed, it may not come up in their feed.
Mm-hmm.
It's so there's so much randomness to the different platforms that it makes it crazy to to look at them and say, well, this was a good marketing move on my part because mm-hmm. it resulted in the people going to look at the book.
Right. Right. Yeah, where are your people? Really that's the hardest part. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is.
Well, we are really close to wrapping up here. Jen, I'm going to give you the last question.
Okay, the most important question. Yes. Plotter or pantser?
Oh, it's a little bit of a combo. I can say the first couple books I did were probably more pants.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I go through and do books nowadays, I structure them out a little more. I do a little bit more plotting ahead of time just to make sure I'm going in the right direction. Now I'm not nailed down to that plot,
mm-hmm.
which is if I say, okay, here's where the plot's going to go. And as I start writing the book, if the characters and the story start taking me in a slightly different direction, I will go in that slightly different direction, trying to pay attention to where the end goal is.
Mm-hmm.
But, right. you know, I'll listen to those characters and see where they want to go. Sometimes there's really interesting things going on that maybe are better than what I had originally had planned. So
nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Very awesome. That's well, like Lauren, it has been. Too. Oh, I'm so sorry. I just talked right over okay. again.
It's okay.
I will be flogged later. Lauren, it has been great to have you on Myth Behaving. We've really appreciated your time. Where can people find you?
So I am on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram under various iterations of Lauren Patzer. Facebook's Lauren Patzer straight up, and also there's a horror author page. Twitter is Lauren Patzer 67. Instagram is Lauren Patzer 8859. And I believe that also works for Threads.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Twitter is now called X, I guess. Yes.
And don't worry, we'll put all this.
And
we'll
avoid all cuss words about that.
keeping it clean, folks.
Keeping it clean. And then TikTok. I think under just Lauren Patzer.
Okay. And we'll put all those up so everybody has them. You don't have to try to write those down as fast as you can and rewind the episode, but it's always good to get those out. So, well, we have done it again, another episode of Myth Behaving. Jen, final thoughts from you?
It was a great week. Great interview. I loved it. I can't wait to see what happens next week.
And happy October to all you folks out there. We made it again. So
yes, we did.
So this is where we'll close off. Thank you so much, Lauren. We will definitely have you back again.
You're welcome. Happy October.